And it's hard to ferret out exactly what Baltazone was investigating, but the past a point. But the company, Franz Lizal Zacharias's company, was involved with, or certainly it cropped up in the context of the investigation of the shooting of a couple of aides to Spanish parliamentarians. Now, that company, SIAISA, was begun in 1944. That is when the Nazi flight capital program was beginning. From an internet site, which appears to have been the SIAISA website, in fact it is, it talks about this. Grupo SAISA, SIAISA, consists of two main companies, SIAISA and Trata Segur. SIAISA is a company that was established in 1944. That is when the Nazis were going underground. That is when the Bormann Capital Flight Capital Program was established. Recall that in the Agence France-Presse article, it mentions that many of the Nazis who were on that extradition list had begun some of their own businesses. Now, what I'm going to do next is to review very quickly some of the information that's contained in AFA 16, For the Record 16, some of the interviews that I had with Dr. Leonard Horowitz and others. AIDS research in the United States was largely focused, was largely conducted, at least in its early phase, by the National Cancer Institute's Special Viral Cancer Research Program. That basically was at Fort Detrick, the Army's top biological and chemical warfare research center, and when it was turned over to the National Cancer Institute, it was maintained for the National Cancer Institute by Litton Bionetics, a genetic engineering, a biotechnology subsidiary of Litton Industries, a major defense contractor, and also a vehicle for covert operations in the post-World War II period. The aforementioned Litton Bionetics, as we looked at in AFA 16, grew out of a company called Bionetics Research Systems Incorporated, which was doing work with, among others, among other organisms, the Mason-Pfizer monkey virus, which produced a disease in monkeys very similar to AIDS, sort of a simian immunodeficiency syndrome. And the top researcher for what eventually became Litton Bionetics was none other than Robert Gallo, the top AIDS researcher in the United States. We've also taken a look at circumstantial evidence that the vehicle for disseminating what I believe was the deliberately created and spread HIV was the experimental hepatitis B vaccine that was manufactured by Merck. Merck is a major pharmaceutical company in the United States. It also was deeply involved with biological warfare research, and there is also a German Merck company as well. The German and American Merck were part of the same company basically until the end of World War I, at which point they became separately incorporated, but there remain contacts between them. And in addition to the biological warfare role that Merck had played, George W. Merck, by the way, was a key figure in biological warfare research for the U.S. in World War II. Merck, the German Merck, and again, the American Merck and the German Merck were part of the same company until the end of World War I. The German Merck was deeply involved with the Bormann Flight Capital Program. Reading now from Martin Bormann, Nazi in Exile, about the Flight Capital Program that led to the Bormann Capital Network, or that produced the Bormann Capital Network. The movement of German assets into Switzerland had also gone well, Bormann noted from his reports. Flight capital investments had been accomplished principally through the establishment of subsidiaries of powerful German firms. Over half the total German capital in Switzerland was used in setting up holding companies representing IG Farben, Merck, Siemens, Osram, Henkel, and others. A holding company may not trade in any form. It may only hold stock in other companies, but through this device, the existing German firms and the 750 new corporations established under the Bormann program gave themselves absolute control over a post-war economic network of viable, prosperous companies that stretched from the Ruhr to the neutrals of Europe and to the countries of South America, a control that continues today and is easily maintained through the bearer bonds or shares issued by these corporations to cloak real ownership. So the German Merck, a key player in the Bormann Flight Capital Program, the American Merck, part of the same company till the end of World War I, was deeply involved with biological warfare research and was the manufacturer of what many researchers feel was the vehicle for spreading AIDS. Now, that experimental hepatitis B vaccine was developed by a fellow named Dr. Wolf Schmunes. He was originally a Polish Jew whose family were killed in the Holocaust. He then became a prisoner of the Stalin regime. A very interesting history for this fellow. After release from detention in 1946, he was somehow allowed to finish his medical education in Tomsk in central Russia. While a student, he married a Russian woman. He specialized in epidemiology, and when his wife contracted a nearly fatal case of hepatitis, Schmunes decided that the study of that disease would be his life's work. In 1959, the Soviets allowed him and his family to return to Poland, where he held a series of minor positions as an epidemiologist in municipal and regional health departments. During this time, he told Kellner an interesting story, unquote. Due to exhaustion and stress from work, he applied to the authorities for a vacation at a rest home. Schmunes was allowed to share a room with a Catholic priest. A remarkable friendship developed, and the two men corresponded for a long time thereafter. The Polish priest eventually became the first Polish pope in Catholic history, the current anti-communist and anti-gay pope, John Paul II. By the way, this book is from AIDS and the Doctors. This passage is from AIDS and the Doctors of Death by Dr. Alan Cantwell, obviously published when JP2 was still alive. Elsewhere, and that entire passage will the entire discussion of Dr. Wolf Schmunes will be in the description for this program. And one of the things that I want to note, too, was that Dr. Eric Traub, again, in charge of bacteriological and virological warfare research for Nazi Germany, was brought back into the United States, or was brought to the United States, under the auspices of Project Paperclip. We took a look at that in For the Record 480, accessing information from Lab 257, the disturbing story of the government's secret Plum Island Germ Laboratory by Michael Christopher Carroll. And one of the things that's worth noting is that, the German virological and bacteriological warfare program that Traub directed was a cancer research program, rather like, to a certain extent at least, the available evidence suggests the viral cancer research program of the NCI. This was certainly a cover for biological warfare. I believe that AIDS was in all probability developed under the auspices of the Special Viral Cancer Research Program at the NCI and Fort Detrick. From Lab 257, everybody seemed willing to forget about Eric Traub's dirty past, that he played a crucial role in the Nazis' cancer research program, unquote, the cover name for their biological warfare program, and that he worked directly under SS Reichsfuhrer Heinrich Himmler. One more detail before we leave this. This is also something that obviously is speculative and is not necessarily relevant at all. But in the mid-1950s, when the National Institutes of Health were basically proving less than vigorous in ferreting out the SV40 contaminant, of the monkey viral contaminant of the polio vaccine, a fellow from South Africa basically became the head of the Division of Biological Standards. This fellow says, he was speaking of a gentleman named Workman. The fellow who was put in charge of the Division of Biologic Standards was Roderick Murray. And from the book The Virus and the Vaccine by Debbie Bookchin and Jim Schumacher, we close with, Murray, a native of South Africa, was a taciturn, inscrutable, and exceedingly cautious leader. Under his direction, the DBS continued to live under the cloud of Qatar and proved unwilling, some critics would say afraid, to make almost any changes in government policies regarding polio vaccine regulation for his entire decade-and-a-half tenure. As a result, the United States would lag far behind Western Europe in adopting advances in vaccine safety. So we had a South African native in charge of basically safeguarding that vaccines in the U.S. did not have deadly monkey viruses or other contaminants. And obviously, he proved less than vigorous in that particular regard.
Now, again, from For the Record, program number 606, Project Paperclip and AIDS. That was recorded on August 12th of 2007. Now, we're going to take a look now at an excerpt from For the Record, or some material from For the Record, 682 from August of 2009, a couple of years later. There are a number of things to think about in that program. First of all, the CCR5 Delta 32 gene, present only in some purebred Northern Europeans. No race other than the white race has it, and it is only found in some purebred Northern Europeans, or, quote, Aryans, unquote. That gene afforded immunity to infection by the Black Death, which may have been bubonic plague, or it may have been a viral hemorrhagic fever. That is in the written description for the Record 606, and I will read it in just a minute. Now, more about the CCR5 Delta 32. That same gene also affords immunity to infection by AIDS. And more about the development of the CCR5 Delta 32 gene. Gene therapy and stem cell therapy have used that gene to cure AIDS patients. In the Baldwin County Now blog of May 27th of 2009, an article by Bob Morgan, local physician, HIV/AIDS cure getting little publicity. It reads in part, "A Foley, Alabama physician said what appears to be the first case of HIV/AIDS cure in the world is getting little attention in the media. Dr. Awadesh K. Gupta, G-U-P-T-A, medical director at Foley Walk-In Medcare, said he first heard of the medical breakthrough in April when he attended the annual conference of the American College of Physicians in Internal Medicine in Philadelphia. It's a conference Gupta tries to attend every year. Quote, "This is the most prestigious organization of physicians in internal medicine and is responsible for certifying postgraduate training in internal medicine. It is also one of the oldest," he said. According to Gupta, who has been practicing medicine in the South Baldwin area since 1997, the cure was first reported in early 2008 by a group of physicians from Germany at the annual conference on retroviruses and opportunistic infections in Boston. The New England Journal of Medicine, one of the most prestigious medical journals in the world, finally published a report in its February 12, 2009 issue, Gupta said. So why has the news of the first case of HIV/AIDS cure received so little attention where the public is concerned? I can't be sure as to why so little publicity, unquote, Gupta said recently. I wonder if it might have something to do with the fact that that gene is the Aryan gene. It involved basically using stem cell and gene therapy to use that gene to cure AIDS patients. This took place in Berlin, and in fact, the individual cured is known as the Berlin patient. I wonder if we will be seeing this at some point in the future. Now, I also want to note that black people have a genetic susceptibility to infection by AIDS. An article by Sabin, S-A-B-I-N, Russell, R-U-S-S-E-L-L, in the San Francisco Chronicle of July 17th of 2008. Newfound genetic clue to HIV rate among blacks. And this, again, is talking about how susceptible blacks are to AIDS infection. There is a genetic susceptibility present in blacks. And again, some purebred Northern Europeans have a genetic trait that makes them immune to infection or protects them from infection by the AIDS virus. It also made them immune to infection by the Black Death. And remember that bubonic plague was studied at length by the Third Reich. They used human experimentation. And Dr. Kurt Blohm was one of the world's experts on bubonic plague. Heinrich Himmler was in charge of the SS, was interested in plague, and Kurt Blohm went to work for the U.S. Biological Warfare Program after World War II. From the article from the Chronicle of July 18th of 08, an international team of AIDS scientists has discovered that a gene variant common in blacks protects against certain types of malaria, but increases susceptibility to HIV infection by 40%. Researchers keen to find some biological clues to explain why people of African descent are bearing a disproportionate share of the world's AIDS cases suspect this subtle genetic trait found in 60% of American blacks and 90% of Africans might partly explain the difference. 10% of the world's population lives in sub-Saharan Africa, but that region accounts for 70% of the men, women, and children living with HIV infection. In the U.S., African Americans make up 12% of the population, but account for nearly half of newly diagnosed HIV infections. So, is the fact that purebred Northern Europeans, or some of them anyway, quote, Aryans, have a hereditary protection against HIV, does that have any relationship to the fact that another genetic trait present in black people makes them particularly susceptible? Now, bear in mind that with regard to Third Reich biological warfare research and chemical research, they began by experimenting with or on apes. Then that disease jumped to humans. This is the same basic pattern we have seen with AIDS. It is an African monkey virus, and then somehow it jumps to human beings. From The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben by Joseph Borkin, there's a link in the Books for Download section of the SpitfireList.com website. And you can read what I'm about to read to you. There is a link to The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben. Quote, guinea pigs and white rats, animals traditionally used for testing purposes, were deemed inadequate for measuring the effect of the nerve gases on humans. Early in the war, it was decided to substitute apes whose biological reactions to such gases were believed to be more like those of human beings. However, apes were not readily available in Germany, and Speer's office supplied 200,000 Swiss francs, a precious foreign currency, to buy those apes in Spain. They were transported to Germany with great difficulty. Many died before the experiments were concluded. Eventually, it was decided to experiment on concentration camp Jews. It is suspected that the testing of IG's poison gases on humans was known in the highest echelons of IG Farben. After the war, George von Schnitzler swore that Ambrose, Schmitz, and Termeer were aware of these activities. Those were Otto Ambrose Hermann Schmitz and Fritz Termeer, key executives of IG Farben. Continuing. According to British intelligence, one of them was reported to have, quote, justified the experiments not only on the grounds that the inmates of concentration camps would have been killed anyway by the Nazis, but also on the grounds that the experiments had a humanitarian aspect in that the lives of countless German workers were saved thereby. The point being, the Nazis began experimenting on apes, then jumped to human beings. The guy who was in charge of procuring apes for IG Farben and the Third Reich was Franz Lizal Zacharias, whom you heard discussed in For the Record 606. He was the head of a company, and his family continued to control that that was founded in 1944 in Spain and that did provided security equipment for Generalissimo Francisco Franco's intelligence service, which was actually run single-handedly in the post-World War II period by Otto Skorzeny, the Hitler commando and Odessa functionary extraordinaire. Why was Franz Lizal Zacharias such an important individual? Certainly was not, and we'll talk about this more in just a few minutes, but it certainly was not because they needed him to teach the Allies how to get AIDS from Africa. They knew how to do that. And certainly doing medical experiments on AIDS is not a crime, let alone a war crime. So what made him so special? And again, he is the guy who was getting the AIDS and basically marshaling them in Spain and sending them to I.G. Farben. What made him so desirable for the Allies? We're going to be talking about that more in just a minute. Now, bear in mind that the Third Reich's biological warfare weapons program was masked as a cancer research institute. Bear in mind, too, that so many of the top scientists, whether people like Kurt Blom or Eric Traub, involved with biological warfare research and the plague, and also rocket scientists like SS officer Werner von Braun, about whom we will hear more in a few minutes or later in the program, and also Walter Dornberger, whom we have already heard about and about whom we will hear more, they were incorporated as well. One of the things that we spoke about in AFA program number 16, and also in a For the Record program in which we interviewed Dr. Leonard Horowitz, Ed Haslam, and Dr. Garth Nicholson, and also the author of AIDS and the Doctors of Death, we talked about the Special Viral Cancer Research Program, which appears to have been a cover, at least in part, for biological warfare research. We're now going to listen to a portion of For the Record 686. This was recorded in September of 2009. Then we're going to come back and talk more about this.
Now, the focal point of this program, or the reason, the raison d'etre for this program, is not only the fact that there is very firm evidence at this point that cancer can be used as a weapon of assassination, but more importantly, it was the National Cancer Institute's Viral Cancer Research Program, or Virus Cancer Program, that was the epicenter of AIDS research in the United States. And specifically, it was that program that, quote, discovered, unquote, the AIDS virus. The NCI's National Cancer Institute's Frederick Research Center basically was the old Fort Detrick, the Army's top biological warfare research center. It was ostensibly turned over to civilian control, but as we're going to see, ostensibly is the key word here. One of the key people involved with that was Dr. Robert Gallo, who was the, quote, discoverer, unquote, note the quotes, of the AIDS virus. And this program is intended to sort of flesh out and to provide detail for this line of research, which I've been engaging in for decades. And specifically, For the Record program 606 and the recently recorded For the Record 682 are immediate antecedents to this, and both programs contain links to, and in many cases, long text excerpts of this particular article. This article can be found in the supplemental section of the SpitfireList.com website, and in the descriptions for the Record 682 and, more importantly, 606, there are links to this article. So without further ado, here goes. This article is called The National Cancer Institute and Fort Detrick Link. It was authored by Richard Hatch. It was published by Covert Action Information Bulletin in their issue number 39, the winter of 1991 and 92. I have read a small amount of this into a supplement to AFA program number 16.
The article begins with a quote from Colonel William D. Taggart, former commander of the Army's medical unit at Fort Detrick. He said, "Those who would increase the potency of biological weapons must search for improved methods of mass production of organisms, factors which will enhance the virulence, ways to prolong the storage life of living agents, ways to improve aerosol stability, and methods of producing variant organisms by recombination or by other means." And then Richard Hatch goes on to write, "In 1969, President Richard Nixon ordered a halt to offensive biological warfare research and weapons stockpiling by the United States. The U.S. Army destroyed its toxins, viruses, and bacteria with heat and disinfectants by May of 1972. The disposal of the scientific personnel was not so simple. Some of these bio-warriors went to the CIA. Others quickly found new support from the National Cancer Institute, particularly in its Virus Cancer Program, or VCP. Parenthetically, it was this program and Fort Detrick, renamed the Frederick Research Center, that was the epicenter of AIDS research, and it is because of that that I am reading this article into the record, and again, sort of shouting it from the rooftop, so to speak. Continuing, the National Cancer Institute funded and supervise some of the same scientists, universities, and contracting corporations, ostensibly for cancer research, which had conducted biological warfare research. Some of these medical research contracts ran simultaneously with the U.S. Biological Warfare Program. When the military work ended, the civilian programs continued to expand on the same critical areas outlined by Colonel Tigert, or Tigert, I'm not sure how it's pronounced, T-I-G-E-R-T-T. The NCI's viral cancer program, a highly politicized public relations effort, was launched in 1971 with great fanfare as part of Nixon's war on cancer. The stated aim of the program was to organize experiments aimed at finding cancer-causing viruses. Apparently, this agenda was compatible with the incorporation into various units of the VCP of possibly dozens of former USBW researchers who continued to study topics with potential military application. Potential cancer-causing viruses were collected, grown in huge amounts, and distributed through the thousands of animals that were infected experimentally, and the aerosol distribution of carcinogenic viruses was also studied. Two former biological warfare facilities would play a large part in the viral cancer program. The U.S. Army's Fort Detrick in Frederick, Maryland, had been the, quote, parent research and pilot plant center for biological warfare, unquote. During the early 1960s, the CIA paid the facility $100,000 a year for biological warfare and chemical agents and their delivery systems. In Oakland, California, the Naval Biosciences Laboratory was involved in early experiments with the plague and collaborated in massive open-air tests of biological warfare simulants in the San Francisco Bay Area in the 1950s. Former biological warfare specialists from both of these centers were deeply involved in all aspects of the viral cancer program. So again, note that in addition to Fort Detrick, also the Naval Biosciences Laboratory, right here in our backyard in Oakland, California, figure prominently in this concatenation, the viral cancer program of the National Cancer Institute. Note also that the CCR5 Delta 32 genetic variant, which provides purebred Northern Europeans, or quote, Aryans, unquote, with a hereditary immunity to HIV infection, was discovered because it also apparently provided immunity to some of those same people from infection by bubonic plague. New thinking, by the way, on the Black Death of Europe is that it was not actually bubonic plague, or what we call bubonic plague, but actually a viral hemorrhagic fever that was introduced from Africa by some of the early trade and exploration that was taking place in that time, possibly by some of the Crusaders as well. Now, what we're going to look at here, in addition to further developing the link between the National Cancer Institute's viral cancer program and biological warfare research, is the relationship between key universities, in this case the University of California, and those programs. Richard Hatch's next section here is called The University Military Complex, and it reads, "Reflecting a common pattern of cooperation, much of the military-related research took place at institutions connected with or directly part of U.S. universities. The University of California is well known for its role in managing the two main U.S. nuclear weapons laboratories, the Los Alamos and Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories. Less well known is the fact that UC Berkeley also helps manage the Naval Biosciences Laboratory, or NBL, earlier called the Naval Biological Laboratory. This connection became central to the VCP and continued after the ban on offensive biological warfare work. Well before President Nixon ordered the conversion of the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Center at Fort Detrick to civilian uses in 1971, this military facility was cooperating closely with the University of California. From 1953 to 1968, the University of California, while managing the Naval Biosciences Laboratory, now at the Naval Supply Center, also had biological warfare contracts with the United States Army. After U.S. treaty obligations would have prevented open research on mass production of dangerous viruses without a medical cover, the VCP provided an ideal excuse to study scale-up problems. One of the first new priorities at the Fort Detrick facility after the ban was, quote, the large-scale production of oncogenic or cancer-causing and suspected oncogenic viruses, unquote. Within a year, the NCI began mass production, and within one 15-month period ending in June of 1977, the viral cancer program produced 60,000 liters of cancer-causing and immunosuppressive viruses. That, by the way, that's quite a figure, 60,000 liters. That is a lot of microorganisms, deadly microorganisms under the circumstances. Continuing, throughout the 1970s, U.S. defensive, unquote, biological warfare efforts were increasingly aimed at the research and development of viral disease agents. The seed stocks for this massive production of viruses came from the Cell Culture Laboratory, or CCL. The CCL was, quote, physically located at the Naval Biosciences Laboratory, or NBL, in Oakland, California. Because this laboratory was financed in part by the NCI and linked to UC, it would become a clearinghouse and central repository for vast quantities of potentially cancer-causing tissues and the tissues that might contain them. Thus, after the ban, the Naval Biosciences Lab at UC continued experimentation on biological agents, but under the guise of defensive, unquote, research. The viral cancer program contract ran concurrently with the Naval Biosciences Laboratory's work on bubonic plague, Rift Valley fever, and meningitis. The NBL did other research for Fort Detrick as well, before the 1972 ban on offensive work. The National Biosciences Laboratory also performed much of the original research into biological warfare done during World War II. At some, NBL work was, quote, listed only in Pentagon research bulletins, unquote. The Naval Biosciences Laboratory Cell Culture Laboratory project was supervised for the viral cancer program of the National Cancer Institute by Drs. James Duff and Jack Gruber. Duff had been at Fort Detrick for 12 years, joining the NCI. His biography lists research into Clostridium botulinum toxins and 13 botulinum toxins known to cause botulism, food poisoning, and they are among the most toxic substances known. It was during Duff's tenure at Fort Detrick that the U.S. Army stockpiled botulinum toxin weapons. There, too, the intensive study of psittacosis or parrot fever resulted in the accidental infection of at least 12 workers while Duff was working there. After serving for 8 years at Fort Detrick, Gruber moved to the National Cancer Institute. His biography lists work on arthropod-borne viruses, unquote. The U.S. stockpiled biological warfare weapons based on one arthropod-borne virus and studied many others. He soon became chair of the Program Resources and Logistics Advisory Group of the Viral Cancer Program, where he helped coordinate projects involving production of viruses, provision of test animals, and the Biohazard Safety Program, unquote. In 1984, Gruber became head of the Cancer Etiology Division of the National Institutes of Health. And in addition to the relationship here between biological warfare research veterans Dr. James Duff and Jack Gruber and the viral cancer research program of the National Cancer Institute's Cell Culture Laboratory, which was maintained at the Naval Biosciences Laboratory, there was also tremendous research into aerosol-borne viruses and other agents. The next section of Richard Hatch's article, it's in the air. The field of aerobiology, or the transmission of disease organisms through the air, is essentially an outgrowth of biological warfare research. The military objective of exposing many people to a biological warfare agent and the ready susceptibility to infection by inhaling these agents make aerosol weapons the most practical form of transmission. The National Cancer Institute also studied aerosol transmission of viruses intensively. One such study, FS57, Aerosol Properties of Oncogenic Viruses, was funded at more than $100,000 a year. After the ban on offensive BW research, the NCI and the Office of Naval Research jointly sponsored NBL experiments on the, quote, aerosol properties of potentially oncogenic viruses. The National Cancer Institute justified its aerosol research because its scientists often handled suspect cancer viruses in a highly concentrated form. A lab accident could release a mist of virus. National Cancer Institute needed to understand and anticipate the danger. How the Navy justified its interest is unknown, but if a new cancer-causing biological warfare agent was discovered, it would likely be delivered as an aerosol. The line between aerosol and biological warfare research was often a fine one. The National Cancer Institute's project officer and former U.S. Air Force virologist Dr. Alfred Hellman worked with Mark Chatigny, a research engineer at Naval Biosciences Laboratory and also a member of the National Cancer Institute's Biohazards Work Group from the NBL. Biological warfare research veteran Dr. Hellman also oversaw the 1971 $100,000 Naval Biosciences Laboratory study on the, quote, physical and biological characteristics of viral aerosols, unquote. In 1961, the Naval Biosciences Laboratory had done similar research for Fort Detrick on the, quote, stability and virulence of biological warfare aerosols, unquote. Dr. Chatigny's Naval Biosciences Lab research into aerosol distribution of viruses would continue well into the 1980s. Such overlapping of purposes raises serious questions about the wisdom of placing control of viral cancer program viruses under the NBL. More about aerosol studies here. And Richard Hatch's next section is called, appropriately, More Aerosol Studies. While UC Berkeley appears to have been at the heart of aerosol BW research, it was by no means alone. Other universities collaborated with the BW effort while working on the VCP in parallel. From 1955 to 1965, the Ohio State University College of Medicine conducted research for Fort Detrick into the aerosol transmission of BW agents, including tularemia and Q fever. In some of these studies, prisoners from the Ohio State Penitentiary were used as guinea pigs. Between 1952 and 1969, the affiliated Ohio State University Research Foundation had 8 contracts with the U.S. Army for biological warfare research. Tularemia, rabbit fever, and Q fever were ultimately stockpiled by the U.S. Army. Before he worked with the University of California, Dr. Hellman supervised an NCI contract for Ohio State University. Designed to study the aerosol transmission of cancer-causing viruses, this research started in 1965 and continued at least until 1972. The principal investigator for this work, Dr. Richard Greismer, would eventually succeed in giving tumors to mice and monkeys. Greismer then went to work briefly at the Oak Ridge National Laboratory, part of the U.S. Department of Energy Nuclear Research System. After his stint at Oak Ridge, Greismer returned to NCI, where he headed the NCI Bioassay Program, which tested chemicals suspected of causing cancer. This multi-million dollar program was so badly managed that epidemics forced the killing of nearly 90,000 test animals and testing of suspected carcinogenic chemicals fell far behind schedule. Many other universities prominent in the U.S. BW program, such as Johns Hopkins, University of Maryland, and the University of Minnesota, were also heavily involved in the VCP. Since the BW work performed by these universities remains classified, the exact relationship between VCP and biological warfare research remains a murky one. The pattern of overlapping military BW and NCI work was paralleled by the relationship between industrial contractors and the viral cancer program of the NCI. Charles Pfizer and Company, Incorporated, a pharmaceutical firm, had a contract with the NCI which included production of, quote, a large quantity of a variety of viruses for the VCP. The immunosuppressive Mason-Pfizer monkey virus was grown in large quantity, and other animal cancer viruses were adapted to grow in human cell lines. During the same time period, 1961 to 1971, the NCI contractor, Pfizer, conducted a secret study for the U.S. Army, quote, into the growth and culture media for unspecified biological agents, unquote. In addition, from 1968 to 1970, Pfizer had a contract for scale production and evaluation of staphylococcal enterotoxoid B, unquote, for the U.S. Army BW program. Staphylococcal enterotoxoid is a protective vaccine against a bacterial toxin which was part of the U.S. arsenal. The production of vaccine against a stockpile BW weapon must be considered an offensive BW project. According to MIT scientists Harley Strauss and Jonathan King, quote, these steps, the generation of a potential BW agent, development of a vaccine against it, testing of the efficacy of the vaccine, are all components that would be associated with an offensive BW program. Clearly, without an antidote or vaccine to protect attacking troops, the utility of a stockpiled BW agent would be seriously limited. Next comes a really important section of the article. President Nixon's 1971 announcement that Fort Detrick would be converted to a center for cancer research could not be immediately implemented. First, biological warfare agents stored there, such as the anti-crop agent Rice Blast, had to be destroyed. The buildings were then decontaminated and the facilities were turned over to the National Cancer Institute, which renamed the facility Frederick Cancer Research Center. Litton Bionetics was named as the prime contractor. A major player in the military-industrial complex, Litton Bionetics Corporation worked extensively on the dispersion of biological warfare agents from planes and included U.S. Air Force contracts for the, quote, supersonic delivery of dry biological agents, unquote. From 1966 to 1968, Bionetics Research Laboratories, which became Litton Bionetics in 1973, held two contracts with the U.S. Army Biological Warfare Program. At the same time, it held major contracts with the National Cancer Institute. One of Bionetics Research Laboratories' most important NCI contracts was a massive virus inoculation program that began in 1962 and ran until at least 1976 and used more than 2,000 monkeys. Dr. Robert Gallo, the controversial head of the current U.S. AIDS research program at National Cancer Institute and the chief of its tumor cell biology laboratory, and the aforementioned Dr. Jack Gruber, formerly of VCP and then NIH, were project officers for the inoculation program. The monkeys were injected with everything from human cancer tissues to rare viruses and even sheep's blood in an effort to find a transmissible cancer. Many of these monkeys succumbed to immunosuppression after infection with the Mason-Pfizer monkey virus, the first known immunosuppressive retrovirus, a class of viruses that includes the HIV or human immunodeficiency virus. In 1976, Dr. Seymour Coulter, a prominent NCI scientist and former military medicine expert, reported on experiments so dangerous that other scientists publicly asked for an end to such work. By blending the genetic material of viruses causing cancers in mice and baboons, he created a new virus which could cause cancer in dogs, monkeys, and even chimpanzees. Because it could attack chimpanzees, other scientists feared it could spread to genetically similar human beings. The new virus was a product of some of the first crude genetic recombination experiments. Lawrence Loeb and Kenneth Tartoff of the Institute for Cancer Research in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, went even further in calling for change and calling for a ban on such potentially dangerous experimentation. The production of malignant tumors in a variety of primate species suggests the possibility of creating viruses that are oncogenic for humans. Therefore, we urge that all experiments involving co-cultivation of known oncogenic viruses with primate viruses be immediately halted until the safety of such experiments are extensively evaluated, unquote. Experiments performed under NCI contract, including many dangerous viral inoculation programs like the primate inoculation program run by Gallo and Gruber. So-called species barriers were routinely breached in efforts to find or create infectious cancer viruses. Viruses native to one species were injected into animals from another species in hope of triggering cancers. Often, the recipient animal would be immunosuppressed by radiation, drugs, or other treatment. NIH primate researchers were well aware that, quote, the ecological niches of man and animal cross with increasing frequency, and this undoubtedly will create or uncover new problems, unquote. At a 1975 NCI symposium, a participant, Dr. J. Moore Janowski, admitted that, quote, environmental motivated groups begin to consider primate laboratories as being a source of danger, unquote. He continued to comment that, quote, a European primate center was not able to begin operations as a result of adverse publicity they obtained because of the Marburg disease outbreak. The speaker was referring to a 1967 outbreak in Yugoslavia and West Germany of this viral disease, which killed several people. Tissues obtained from the African green monkeys used in biomedical work were the source of the mini-epidemic. Dr. Moore Janowski suggested that researchers should fight against tighter restrictions on primate experiments. Upon the National Cancer Institute aegis, VCP provided many opportunities for contact between former BW specialists and others in the scientific community. Former BW specialists Dr. Peter Garone and Arnold Wiedem were prominent members of the biohazard control and containment segment of the VCP. Their positions allowed them frequent contact with laboratories handling hazardous viruses. Garone and Wiedem both worked for many years at Fort Detrick. They were both specialists in the airborne transmission of diseases. In the 1950s, Wiedem was in charge of U.S. Army tests of tularemia or rabbit fever on human volunteers. In Garone's BW research, he used prisoners from the federal prison camp at Eglin Air Force Base in Florida. This group of human guinea pigs was more fortunate than Dr. Wiedem's. They were exposed only to cold viruses. Garone was awarded the Army's Meritorious Civilian Service Award for his efforts at Fort Detrick. The 1975 NCI-sponsored symposium on biohazards and zoonotic problems of primate procurement, quarantine, and research illustrates another aspect of NCI military cooperation. Zoonoses, diseases that can be transmitted from animals to humans, make up the majority of biological warfare agents. The meeting brought together NCI researchers, 9 military officers from major to colonel, and a civilian from the Edgewood Arsenal, a U.S. chemical warfare facility also in Maryland. The officers were from the U.S. Army Medical Research Institute of Infectious Diseases, the Defense Nuclear Agency, and the Armed Forces Institute of Pathology. In addition, Drs. Wiedem, Duff, Gruber, and Garone were all in attendance, and by the way, all biological warfare research veterans. Garone presented a paper on the biohazards of experimentally infected primates. He now headed Tulane University's Delta Regional Primate Research Center. In passing, he mentioned aerosol hazards and recommended, quote, exposing animals so that only the head is in contact with the aerosol rather than whole body exposure, unquote. Wiedem had previously briefed him on BW tests involving just such exposure of monkeys to aerosolized staphylococcal enterotoxin. In these tests, 4 Fort Detrick workers still became ill through exposure to the animals. Presumably, Garone was also aware of a 1964 accident when 15 Fort Detrick workers inhaled aerosol staphylococcal enterotoxin B, milligram for milligram, one of the most deadly agents ever studied, unquote. Skipping down. Research into viruses during the war on cancer provided an ideal cover for continuing biological warfare research. As Colonel Tigard advised, the NCI project allowed the mass production of viruses, the development of means to enhance virulence, exploration of aerosol transmission, and the production of new recombinant disease agents. These civilian projects ran concurrently with military projects in many cases. When political expediency dictated an end to overt U.S. biological warfare research, the viral cancer program provided a means to continue experiments that would otherwise be difficult to justify. And again, AIDS figures prominently in this concatenation.
That again, an excerpt for the record, program number 686 from August of 2000. and 9. And again, from AFA Program 16, recorded in April of 1986, we have been looking at the National Cancer Institute Special Viral Cancer Research Program as basically, among other things, perhaps as a biological warfare development center. Bear in mind that the Third Reich's BW program was also masked as a cancer research facility. Now, we're going to come back to the whole issue of Dr. Franz Lizow Zacharias, again, the guy who was getting the monkeys for IG Farben and who was a major focal point of Allied interest. They wanted him for some reason. Experimenting on apes is not a crime. It's certainly not a war crime. And they didn't need Zacharias to help them get monkeys from Africa. They knew how to do that. I don't know why they wanted Zacharias, again, an individual who in 1944, before the end of the war, began a company that provided security equipment to the Spanish intelligence service under Francisco Franco. Zacharias was getting the apes for IG Farben, German biological and chemical warfare research, began with apes, then moved up to human beings. AIDS has followed a similar path. It is a mutated monkey virus, I suspect deliberately so, that has jumped to human beings. But why Franz Lizow Zacharias? A classic case, someone to whom I spoke who is knowledgeable about such things, alleges that the simian immunodeficiency virus, SIV, is a virus that is native to the green monkey of South Africa, or Southern Africa. There are a number of four, according to him, different species called the green monkey, the one in question. I don't know the Latin name for it. It is, however, a staple of the diet for the people, the inhabitants of the region. It is captured in the wild, then brought to the marketplace where it is sold on the hoof and then eventually slaughtered, butchered, and eaten. The SIV and the green monkey that host it have basically evolved through a point of symbiosis. The virus has mutated to where it does not cause fatality in the green monkey. For all I know, they get a cold or the equivalent therein, but it does not destroy the immune system of the green monkey. It does, however, devastate the immune systems of other primates, and that was allegedly first discovered at a primate laboratory at the University of California at Davis. Macaques, in particular, are vulnerable to SIV infection. What I wonder is this, and again, this is obviously speculation. I wonder that as Franz Lizow Zacharias was accumulating various African monkey or primate species, he had some green monkeys in there, and eventually the SIV, which would not have caused fatal immune system failure in the green monkey, got to other monkeys in Franz Lizow Zacharias' collection. The passage from The Crime and Punishment of I.G. Farben by Joseph Borkin noted that many of the apes passed away. They did not survive the journey to Europe and I.G. Farben. I wonder if SIV had something to do with that. And I wonder if at some point Franz Lizow Zacharias noted that it appeared that there was some sort of infectious agent that was causing apparent immune system failure or fatal illness in his monkeys. And did then an SS and or IG Farben medical team come down? And did they draw serous samples from the affected apes? And did they then inject those into other apes and other primates? And did that then cause immune system failure for them as well. According to Ed Haslam, among others, SIV was too small a virus to have detected with the microscopy that was available at the late World War II period. Apparently, that did not become detectable until later. I wonder, however, if serial samples were taken from some of Zacharias's apes that may have gone down with immune system failure due to SIV infection. And again, he was collecting apes from Africa and shipping them to IG Farben. Many of them died in transit. Did he, in fact, unwittingly bring about the discovery of SIV, which may not have been recognized as a virus, but if serial samples were taken, properly treated, and then injected into apparently healthy apes, and if that caused the immune system failure and fatality that some of the other primates that were infected by SIV, which again does not hurt the green monkey, but which does cause fatal immune system collapse in other species of primates. Did, in fact, Franz Liesau Zacharias and perhaps others, did they recognize that they had a communicable immune-destroying agent for primates? That might very well have made him a target for recruitment, because that may very well have been adaptable to human beings. Again, this is pure speculation, but I wonder about it. It doesn't make a lot of sense. Certainly, they didn't need someone to teach them how to get apes from Africa. They knew how to do that. They certainly weren't going to try him for war crimes, for experimenting on apes. That was not a war crime. So what was it? I don't know, but I wonder about that. In Dr. Mary's Monkey, published by Prime Day in 2007, we interviewed Ed Haslam in For the Record 644, and he has written the following about SIV. SIV is the simian immunodeficiency virus, one of several monkey viruses known to have contaminated the polio vaccine. The more carcinogenic SV40 has received most of the press. SIV, a single-strand RNA retrovirus, is considerably smaller than SV40, a double-stranded DNA virus. The technology of the 1950s was not able to filter SIV from the viral extracts. Further researchers of the day did not consider retroviruses to be dangerous, so they basically ignored them. AIDS has taught us how dangerous retroviruses can be. If, quote, the project, unquote, in New Orleans was intentionally exposing SV40 to radiation, may they have exposed SIV to radiation at the same time. Simply stated, HIV-1 is a mutated form of SIV. Did the mutation which changed SIV into HIV-1 occur when SV40 was exposed to radiation? Was this the moment of conception of AIDS? Could this artificially induced mutation explain why HIV-1 is mutating so rapidly? Why is it behaving so unnaturally? Why it is behaving so unnaturally, unquote. By the way, it was not that I'm incorrect here. It was not that the microscopy of that period could not detect SIV, but that retroviruses were not considered dangerous, and the filtering process would not have been able to filter SIV from viral extracts. Again, I wonder, did physicians, maybe SS and or IG Farben physicians, discover SIV when they went to investigate why Franz Liesau Zacharias' shipments of monkeys were falling sick? And it might even have had something to do with the decision to begin experimenting on human beings, because if so many of the monkeys were getting SIV, a communicable immune system collapse, maybe they decided to go to humans for that reason. But in any event, I wonder if the interest, again, on the part of the Allies in Franz Liesau Zacharias, the guy who was getting the monkeys for IG Farben, have something to do with SIV. I've also been told by that same knowledgeable source that SIV and HIV2, the second variant of the AIDS virus, are very similar, but there is a piece of genetic material that functions like a period in a sentence. It causes the genes to begin reading one sequence of amino acids and to leave off one sequence and begin reading another. This individual alleged that that was extremely unusual and that it indicated the probability of a deliberate genetic mutation. Again, this is food for thought and grounds for further research, but I wonder about that. And I wonder about Ed Haslam's rumination as well. Now, more about the mutating of bubonic plague and about what that may have been. Now, again, bubonic plague is believed to have been thought to have caused the Black Death in Europe, the enormous amount of deaths from plague in medieval Europe. The Third Reich was studying bubonic plague. More about that in a minute. It now has come to the fore that, in fact, it was not bubonic plague, but rather a hemorrhagic fever that was the main probable culprit in the Black Death. This is from the Science Daily of April 3rd of 2005. A University of Liverpool project. Biologists discover why 10% of Europeans are safe from HIV infection. Skipping down. Scientists have known for some time that these individuals carry a genetic mutation known as CCR5 delta 32 that prevents the virus from entering the cells of the immune system, but have been unable to account for the high levels of the gene in Scandinavia and relatively low levels in areas bordering the Mediterranean. They have also been puzzled by the fact that HIV emerged only recently and could not have played a role in raising the frequency of the mutation to the high levels found in some Europeans today. Professor Christopher Duncan and Dr. Susan Scott from Liverpool University's School of Biological Sciences, whose research is published in the March edition of the Journal of Medical Genetics, attribute the frequency of the CCR5 delta 32 mutation to its protection from another deadly viral disease acting over a sustained period in bygone historic times. Some scientists have suggested this disease could have been smallpox or even bubonic plague, but bubonic plague is a bacterial disease rather than a virus and is not blocked by the CCR5 delta 32 mutation. Professor Duncan commented, quote, "The fact that the CCR5 delta 32 mutation is restricted to Europe suggests that the plagues of the Middle Ages played a big part in raising the frequency of the mutation. These plagues were also confined to Europe, persisted for more than 300 years, and had a 100% case mortality." Still more. Around 1900, historians spread the idea that the plagues of Europe were not a directly infectious disease, but were outbreaks of bubonic plague, overturning an accepted belief that had stood for 550 years. Professor Duncan and Dr. Scott illustrated in their book Return of the Black Death, 2004, published by Wiley, that this idea was incorrect and the plagues of Europe from 1347 to 1660 were, in fact, a continuing series of epidemics of lethal viral hemorrhagic fever that used the CCR5 as an entry port into the immune system. Using computer modeling, they demonstrated how this disease provided the selection pressure that forced up the frequency of the mutation from 1 in 20,000 at the time of the Black Death to values today of 1 in 10.